Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is J.R. Moore coming to you live from deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks on Sunday, the 14th day of March, 2010. And welcome to the John Moore Show. We have two special guests today. The first hour, we will have Ann Morrison. Ann is a friend, and she's an engineer and a researcher when it comes to earth changes and earthquakes, things of that nature. She stays on top of these matters. And look forward to having her on here in a few minutes. The second hour, we'll have John DiNardo. John is a fellow Planet X researcher. He taught physics in high school, very bright guy, and he stands on top of these matters also. So it'll be a fun day and a good day to get caught up with everybody. And Earth changes are upon us. These major earthquakes have been more frequent than anytime I've ever seen them. I see that we do have Ann on the line now. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the second hour of the John Moore Show on Sunday, the 14th day of March, 2010. Welcome back. We have a special guest this hour, Mr. John DiNardo. John is back east. He's got a degree in physics, used to teach high school physics, and he's a fellow Planet X researcher, a fellow talk show host. And without further ado, John, are you there, sir?
Pleasure being with you and your audience.
Thank you. Good to have you. John, it looks like, you and I have been at this a number of years, and we knew years ago, many years ago, that we'd be having these conversations about increased seismic activity and volcanism, didn't we?
Yes, and, we just were planning for it and studying and biding our time until this situation became severe enough that people would listen.
And we're at that point. I don't know if you heard my interview with Ann Morrison earlier or not, but I know you're I'm sure you're a regular visitor to the USGS site on earthquakes.
Yeah, I try to follow it frequently,
and
regularly.
You notice that everything 6.0 and larger is in bright red, correct?
That's right.
Okay. When in reality, as you and I know, everything 5.0 should be in red, because under the original Richter scale, those would all be sixes, wouldn't they?
That's right. They, as you said, they moved it up 1 point, and 1 point represents an order of magnitude. That is 10 times decrease in the reading.
1,000%. Yes.
Right, yeah. If it went up by 0.1, it would be twice as great. If it went up by 0.2, two times greater, and then 0.3 would be three times greater until you get up to the number 1, and that wouldn't that be 10 times greater?
Right, 10 times, 1,000%. That's correct.
Right, okay.
Now, if you look at that USGS site, well, we got a break. John,
okay.
Hold on. We got callers. Everybody hold on. We'll be right back. John DiNardo, are you still there, sir?
Yes, I am.
Okay. The point I was attempting to make before the break was, if you include all the 5.0 and higher in that USGS list in red, what goes from concerning becomes quite alarming, doesn't it?
That's right. And the government this is a clear evidence that the government is trying to pacify the people to keep them from becoming alarmed over the increase in earthquakes by reducing the value, the actual stated value, while the actual intensity of the earthquakes is increasing, and compensating for it by giving us a lower value to deceive us. So there's clear evidence that something's wrong, and they have an agenda and a reason for deceiving the public.
Absolutely, and it goes back to 1985. Charles F. Richter died about a year before that, and they didn't dare change it while he was still alive, would they?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm surprised that he had that much influence that he could hold his ground against them while he was alive. Usually they do whatever they want to do.
Well, that's true. That's true. But I think Dr. Harrington, I should say, found out what happens when you don't read the memo.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a tragedy. He was a great man, a great astronomer, and he was about to reveal to the world that he had discovered this actual planet. The calculations had been done many times before, and he did them very meticulously. And then he actually proved it by dispatching a telescope, an 8-inch telescope, to Black Birch Observatory in New Zealand, which was the southern viewing location for Planet X during the months of May and June. Because as Earth rotates around the sun during that particular point of the year, May and June is when you can observe Planet X on its course below the ecliptic plane and watch it coming in. He had put out a memo, which you can get on the internet, Dr. Harrington's memo from the United States Naval Observatory. He was the chief astronomer there. Right. And he stated in his memo in October of 1991 that he had no reason to change his belief that Planet X was coming in from the direction of the constellation Scorpius, I believe, which he had said a few years earlier. Then he said also in that memo that he was dispatching a telescope to New Zealand, and that during the viewing months, May and June, that would be May and June of 1992, plates would be taken, photographic plates would be taken, and then returned to Washington, where he would do the blink comparison, which is a way of seeing a moving object amidst millions of stars in the background, right. Where the plates would be blinked to determine any motion of that detected object. Well, there was no word that I know of from in any public source as to the result of that blinking, that comparison that was done with of the plates in mid-1992. Then we have a few months later, Dr. Harrington dies in January of 1993.
Right. Allegedly from a fast-acting form of cancer.
Right. He died in a matter of a couple weeks. Now, that's very suspicious. We know what happened to many other people who died suspiciously. It's very difficult for us to get the evidence, to get the goods on anyone who might have murdered him because they keep it secret. Right. But we have a lot of circumstantial evidence. One is, where are the plates? How come nobody took over Harrington's work and did the blink comparison on those plates? You hear nothing about it at all. His work was basically scuttled. Right. And then, this is really a very solid piece of evidence indicting the people in power for eliminating what we suspect to be the elimination of Dr. Harrington, and that is the obituary of Dr. Harrington, which is published on the internet. You can get it. I downloaded it just in case it disappeared. But in it, the authorities at the U.S. Naval Observatory, where he had been the chief astronomer, gave him a eulogy, and they stated that he, during the end of his career, toward the end of his life, he had lost interest in Planet X. Well, this was a blatant lie. I mean, we all knew that. They knew it. The world, the astronomical community knew it because Dr. Harrington was at the pinnacle of his work in searching for Planet X. This search was the greatest search in modern astronomical history, dating back to 1871. So any astronomer would consider that a great, great accolade to have found Planet X.
Absolutely.
So this was a lie.
They were talking about the last 2 weeks of his life. That's when he lost interest, when he was dying from plutonium.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and that's what they do. They inject you with plutonium and say you died of cancer.
That's right. They've done it to others, too. I mean, we have documents. Jack Ruby, the murderer of Lee Harvey Oswald, was about to testify while in prison, and then he died of cancer suddenly. And then who was it? James McDougal. He was going to testify against President Bill Clinton. He died suddenly, and Mae Brussels was another one.
Unless they're really in a hurry, then they'll move the transponders for your plane landing like they did with Ron Brown.
That's right. That's exactly right. They have, air assassinations are very popular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We could get into a whole, study on that.
We got the caller stacking up here like aircraft at LaGuardia waiting to land, and we got first Sheldon in Tucson. Go ahead, Sheldon. You're on the air, Sheldon. Wake up. Okay, well, we'll move on to Mike in Illinois. Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, sir. I hate to change the subject here, but I need a water filter. I'm tired of carrying around these gallons of water. I usually got the reverse osmosis stuff, you know, from Jewel. Loved it, still love it. Tastes great, but I'd like to get a filter a good one. I know they got the Berkey and the Dalton, and then they got something else, Aqua Rain. Could you give me any advice which one would be best?
If you go to their public website and get the Berkey, you'll be very satisfied. They've got the what I call base camp models, which sit on the countertop, and the smaller ones, the Go Berkey model, which is for your bug out bag for when you're on the move. I think you can't go wrong. And they've been around a long time, Mike, and have a great reputation.
Okay, I'll take a look at that. Does that have the ceramic filter at all, or?
I'm not sure how the small one works. The large ones are ceramic filters, yes.
Okay, very good. Yeah, all these different changes happening. I mean, I'm like out of work, and I got to start hitting the road here looking for work. That's why I'm going to bring along my water filter and all the rest. I mean, it just seems like the stock market is pumped up.
There was a town in Southern Illinois that the water was so bad. I was there on a job for about 3 days, and even made the coffee taste bad.
Right.
Ooh,
okay.
Scary stuff.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Okay. Thank you. And
John, I would like to mention that I think we should begin to warn our audience that they should start really thinking about and working together with us in preparing for solar storms that I suspect and many other people suspect are going to be occurring this year or next year. Solar storms that could be so severe that two major catastrophes will result. One would be the destruction of our power grids, and that would throw us back into a primitive lifestyle. We would be overnight forced into ancient ways of living. Secondly, I'm sorry, what?
I say, here's what people understand. The power grid as we know it only existed since World War II. The power grid was in the cities first and didn't expand out past the cities until the 1940s. But the infrastructure that people had in the teens and 20s and 30s on these farms and ranches, that's all gone. We'd be going back to no electricity without the infrastructure the infrastructure we had in the teens, 20s, and 30s on these farms and ranches was not too bad, but that's all gone.
That's right. So we have to start talking about preparing. We've really put out, and we've got a lot of evidence to indicate that these solar storms are coming soon. We could talk about Planet X and how it is exciting the sun and beginning to excite the sun after its this two-year lull in solar activity, which I believe was due to Planet X passing below Jupiter, and Planet X and its hordes of surrounding comets interacting electrically with Jupiter, drawing electrical fire away from the sun and toward Jupiter. But that was just a temporary lull before the storm. Now we can expect solar blasting, and there's a great deal of evidence I'd like to touch on quickly. And then with the evidence, say to people, now we've got a ball, we've got to take the ball and start running with it. That is number one. How are we going to prepare to live without power? Number two, how are we going to prepare to live when we are being blasted by the sun with temperatures scorching, burning up, people dying on the surface of the earth from intense solar blasting? I looked this up in the Bible.
Pardon me? Two parts of that, John, the solar blast. One is the Fahrenheit temperature. The other is the radiation. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. There are going to be X-rays associated with the high temperature, with the heat.
Now, the temperatures, my knowledge of the temperatures, we're looking at about 150 degrees for maybe an hour or so, maybe less.
Sure. I mean, that sounds plausible.
Okay. But and then my belief, based on my knowledge, is if you're sheltered from the radiation part of it, which would be basically any good-sized structure, I sit in a 150-degree sauna for an hour routinely, and I feel quite good when I come out. But you need shelter from the radiation part of it.
Right.
Okay, hold on. John, hold on. We got callers. Hold on. We'll be back after the break.
You've got an inside corner on the truth, thanks to John Moore and the Republic Broadcasting Network. To talk to John Moore live on the air, call 1-800-313-9443.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 14th day of March. John, before we get back to these fascinating topics, tell people how they can listen to your radio program, please.
Okay, it's called Planet X and Bible Prophecy. It's a drama, actually, with music in the background. It dramatizes the whole situation of Planet X while bringing along a lot of diverse background information. It's on Sundays, every Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern on 3185 shortwave, 3185 shortwave, Sundays at 10 p.m. Simulcast on the internet on wwrb.org, wwrb.org.
All right. Sounds good. That's what it'll be on tonight in a couple. It's just a few hours away.
Yes.
And it's you have 17 programs that are rotated every 17 weeks?
17, yes. I'm trying to develop more. But so far, it's been diverse enough because, you know, with shortwave, people often miss quite a bit because of the interference, so they right. like to be able right. to hear it a second time.
Yeah.
And the information is pretty dense, too. So, I do intend to get a few more episodes.
Okay. We got a request here. A listener wants to do the what Bible verse mentions the sun flares.
Okay, I was looking at my Strong's Concordance. There are quite a few of them that talk about blasting. And then I looked up the word blasting in the Strong's Concordance of the Hebrew language, and it says scorching. Now, let me get my magnifying glass, because these letters are very small,
yeah.
the words in the Strong's Concordance. Let's see, the word blast, I'll try to recite some of the books and verses here. Exodus 15:8, Joshua 6:5, mm-hmm. 2 Samuel 22:16, mm-hmm. 2 Kings 19:7, mm-hmm. Job 4:9, Psalm 18:15, Isaiah 25:4, Isaiah 37:1, and there's a whole.
Yeah, I think we.
I'm sorry, 37:7.
You made your point pretty clearly there. There's multiple Bible verses referring to this.
You know what? They can get the Strong's Concordance online. Just look for Strong's Concordance online and look up the word blasting that way.
Okay, that sounds fair enough.
Now God has done this in the past to His people who have disobeyed Him, who defied Him and denied Him. And I think this is exactly what's happening today. And God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So
Absolutely.
If He punished us with blasting, well, His people with blasting centuries ago, He's going to do the same thing again.
I agree. Absolutely. We got a call here from Indiana. John from Indiana, go ahead.
Hello.
Go ahead,
Hello.
John.
I wanted to ask if major earthquakes generally lengthen the day.
If they occur late in the day?
No. Do they make the day longer? For a few seconds?
They do change the length of the day, but it's from what I've read, it's like in a way of like a microsecond or a millisecond, a very infinitesimal fraction of a second.
Yeah, that suggests that the occurrence of earthquakes is a geometric progression rather than arithmetic, and therefore they become more frequent. Because, of course, the implosion will put pressure on the magma. You understand?
Yeah. Right. The implosion?
The implosion. It's the opposite of an explosion.
The implosion
crust will shrink slightly because of the decrease in centrifugal force. Because of the
Yeah, right, exactly,
of the
right.
Day.
If, Right, I see what you're saying. If the Earth spins at a slower rate, then the bulge around the equator will reduce. John Moore has spoken about that, I think, in the past.
Right.
And that causes the flooding and all that that has happened in the past.
I wonder, with water, a decrease in centrifugal force does not necessarily compact the water, does it?
Of a decrease in centrifugal force will cause the Earth to would result from the Earth spinning at a slower rate, right?
Yeah.
And that decrease in centrifugal force is the outward throwing force would decrease, and therefore the bulge at the equator would contract slightly,
mm-hmm.
and then the water levels would rise in that equatorial area.
The loss of a centrifugal force would not cause the water to compact.
So the water would rise. John Moore has spoken about that in the past, where the water rises.
The water would rise.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. The other thing, Anne, who was on before, was going to describe the difference between a tropical earthquake and a temperate earthquake. And if you could go into that, I'd appreciate it.
Oh, I don't know anything about the difference between tropical and temperate earthquakes.
We may have to work till next
week. It may not be important.
And get back on.
She was starting to talk about that. She was comparing the Sumatra with the one in Chile. Sumatra was at the equator, or near the equator, and the one in Chile was, I think, about 37 or 40 degrees south.
Right.
So that she suggested there was a difference, and then the conversation got into other things, and off the air.
That's the nature of radio. We sometimes things get away from us, but we'll address that probably next week, John.
Okay.
Everybody, hold on. We got a break coming up. John DeNaro, stay tuned. We'll be right back. Sunday, March 14th, 2010. This is the John Moore Show. My name is John Moore. I'm a working private detective, homicide detective. Worked my first murder in 1973. I have two homicides in my case inventory right now. My latest DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You, which has to do with a topic we're discussing, Planet X and rising ocean levels and a violently abrupt climate change. Is available at my website, thelibertyman.com. You can see my photograph, read my bio there, thelibertyman.com. My toll-free number is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. John DeNardo, are you still there, sir? Hello, John.
I'm here. I'd like to mention, John, since many scientists are expecting solar scorching to be occurring very soon, this is going to be a catastrophic event. Many people will die from it because the temperatures will get very intense and the radiation will be damaging also. I'd like to pose the question to your audience that they start thinking about ways that we can shield ourselves from this, what we expect to be solar scorching, even if it doesn't get real bad. We have to prepare for it just as you would prepare for any emergency, even though you're not sure it's going to occur. I was thinking about the idea of, well, we can dig. I mean, that's what the power elite are doing right now. They've got underground cities and, you know, abandoned silos, and they've also got deep underground tunnels, very complex labyrinthian cities that they have planned a long time ago because they know that the solar scorching is coming.
Right.
And they know that this is their only way to survive, and they want to leave us up here to eliminate us, to really wipe out most of the population.
what you're saying is true. It's only been about 15 months ago that I figured out the solar scorching part of it. The underground cities and bases didn't make any sense until I figured that part out.
That's right. Same thing happened with me. I was saying to myself, why would they go underground if they want to escape earthquakes? That's the worst place to be.
Absolutely.
But now I realize they have no choice. Either you go underground or you get scorched to death.
Right.
So,
go ahead.
I was going to say, now, I was thinking of this idea. People could dig individually in their yards, you know, like dig some kind of a shallow shelter, and then have something like a dome-shaped structure that would, domes are wind-resistant, because we expect very high winds, damaging winds, and a dome-shaped structure is your best defense. But something with lots of rocks and dirt or whatever on top of it. Now, I know it would be kind of dangerous, but if it were constructed properly, and if the individual would dig a shallow shelter area with some kind of a dome-like support or dome-like top on it that has deep dirt or many rocks, then that dirt and rocks would provide some shielding against the scorching and against some of the radiation, too.
You're right, and you know, looking at protection from nuclear war, 3 feet of dirt and rock will protect you against the majority of that stuff. 3 feet thick, and it needs to be built to withstand seismic problems. And you're right, when you say high winds, we're looking at 200 mile an hour winds for some period of time when the jet stream comes down to the surface of the planet, which has already been happening, by the way, in rather compact areas where entire forests are wiped out in a matter of a few minutes. And anyway, we've got a couple of calls on hold here. Dave in Canada. Go ahead, Dave.
Thank you again, John. Hello, John.
Oh, yes.
Hello. I have a question. Thank you. The last show, Ann answered both my questions, but this is devastation, what John is talking about. I've changed my question now. I'd like to ask this. If we are to survive the radiation and the sunspots, okay, I know communication is very important. How do we protect our electronics from EMP bombs or these solar flares, radiation flares? But at the same time, you just said if we dig a shallow underground, we can survive that way. But how can we even grow any gardens? We should be thinking about growing underground or something of that sort, because our food won't survive.
Right. Well, Dave, I'll take the first part.
I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Dave, for the call. Protection from electromagnetic pulse means shielding or something called a Faraday box, which can be a steel ammunition can. It could be a new galvanized steel trash can. When I say new, you don't want to put your electronics in with something that used to be a garbage can, with a tight-fitting steel lid. That will protect your electronics from electromagnetic pulse. As far as the food and so forth, all grass plants, now it's going to be, you know, the planets, our planet's 24,000 miles in diameter. About 12,000 miles of the planet, one half the planet, would be facing the sun and getting radiated and blasted by this solar flare. And if you're unlucky enough to be facing that part of the sun, you'll have to live through that. It will destroy all grass plants, and it's an event that will last about an hour, possibly less, but that's all it would take to destroy all grass plants facing the sun when that event happens. When you come out of it, you should be able to plant and harvest food as normal, as long as the seeds have been protected from that initial blast. Any follow-up there, John?
Well, I mean, yes, that's true. You can recover if the blasting stops, but we expect it just to get worse and worse. For example, if you see Ghost, I would advise everyone to get the movie Knowing, to rent that movie Knowing, Knowing. I think they're producers of that movie are trying to warn the people that there is going to be intense solar scorching. I mean, it's going to set cities on fire. And it's just going to get worse. And then, of course, considering trying to recover and grow after the scorching? Well, there'll be earthquakes. There'll be tsunamis. There'll be windstorms that are so intense that'll destroy everything you try to plant. I'm depending upon sprouting. I mean, if I have a shelter, you just have a huge jar and you put the seeds. I buy lentils. You can just go and buy bags and bags of dry lentils and buckwheat groats from your health food store. Those two together make a wonderful
combination.
Most
grains can be sprouted. You're right. Wheat berries can be sprouted. Flax seeds can be sprouted. And you're right. Mason jars, flat plastic trays. You just need a little sunlight and a little water because that's about it.
Right, and usually they actually sprout in the dark, and they say you should give them a little bit of sunlight as they mature. But most of the sprouting, like the initial
sprouting, right?
Yeah, that's all done in the dark anyway. So you can survive on sprouts because there's everything that's needed for the body. The enzymes, the minerals, vitamins are contained in that sprout.
And I know Professor McKinney is now marketing flax seeds, and he's real pumped up on the health benefits and nutrition of flax seeds, which I don't dispute for a moment. It's a great way to get a lot of bang for your buck, where 10 pounds of seeds eaten, flax seeds, would be one thing, but 10 pounds of flax seeds sprouted would be a massive amount of food.
That's right. That's a very good point.
Okay, and we got another call here. Angelo in Idaho.
Yes, hello, John. How are you doing today?
Good, good.
Hey, I don't know if you got my email. I sent you an email last week. You probably get a million of them, but I said wormwood, very important, and from Angelo. But, I think one of your callers a couple weeks ago talked about Our Lady of Fatima. I don't know if you remember that. But, if you want a lot of information, because, you know, I read a lot of this stuff years ago, and I didn't know what it meant until I actually overheard your show. You were actually on the David Hodges show there, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And so I went back and recorded it, and, some of my friends got your DVD and so forth. But I went back, and I have a book called if your listeners or you want to know what's going to happen. These saints have prophesied this for centuries, from the first century to the 20th century, and you can go to...
Speaking to your telephone, Angelo.
What's that? Speak up?
That's it. You're doing it. Speaking to the phone.
Okay, so if you want a lot of information on what's going to happen, you can go to... the book is called... It's about 110 pages, but if you go to page 83... there's Catholic, it's called The Coming Chastisement by Yes DuPont. It was put out in the 70s, and it's called The Coming Chastisement. And then also there's another book called Trials, Tribulations, and Triumphs Before, During, and After the Antichrist. And, you know, all the stuff that you guys are saying is right, I mean, pretty much, as far as... And from what all the research I've done, it's supposed to end with 3 days of darkness, and if you look in Apocalypse 8 or 9 or Revelations 8 and 9, it says that that the fifth seal is open, and the angel sounded the trumpet, and they open up the bottomless pit of hell, and basically in those 3 days, that the devils are actually going to be loosed from hell, and they're going to destroy, torture, and kill all of the people, all the persecutors of the church, all the people who do not have the name of God on them, and all the evil people of the world. And then after that comes a period of peace, and actually the sun is supposed to shine more brilliantly than it ever has, and with all the nitrogen and hydrogen, all the fire in the sky and everything, the ground is supposed to be completely rebuilt again, as the earth is with, but the thing is, it's going to be a starting period over. I mean, just like you said, it's there's the electricity is going to be wiped out. I mean, it's basically going to be.
Well, your interpretations are pretty are same as mine, actually, in terms of the Bible prophecies and all the events, the 3 days of darkness, and that will result from the earth's rotation pausing for a few days due to the passage of another planet gravitationally acting upon Earth in opposition to the sun's gravitational forces upon Earth. So there's going to be a battle between the Sun and the planet and its planet X, or some of planet X's huge surrounding comets upon Earth. It's like these have magnetic forces because they are of charge. These comets are stripping saturated with plasma, electrical charge, and they're traveling. Whenever you have electrically charged bodies in motion, those bodies create a magnetic field which spreads out laterally from both sides, sort of like the wake of a boat as a boat travels through the river. It puts out a wake that's goes out laterally and splashes against the shore. Well, that invisible electromagnetic wake strikes the Earth and interacts with the Earth's magnetic field and affects the rotation of the Earth, but also the gravitational forces between that passing body and the Earth act upon one another, such that the Earth slows down, and you have what has been recorded in the past by ancient scribes as 3 or 4 days of darkness. Actually, it turned out to be could have been 7 days, as far as I read.
Days. Three quick quotes from these books, because you'll see what I mean. This is from Saint Hildegard in the 12th century, and he said, "By its tremendous pressure, the comet, which I parentheses wormwood, will force much out of the ocean and flood many countries, causing many want and many plagues. All coastal cities will live in fear, and many of them will be destroyed by tidal waves, and most living creatures will be killed, and even those who will escape will die from horrible diseases." And then here's another one from Blessed.
Can you give us that citation again? Who was that from?
That was from St. Hildegard, the 12th century.
Okay.
And this next one is Blessed Anna Marie Tagey, the 19th century. She said, "God will ordain two punishments. One in the form of wars, revolutions, and other evils will originate on earth. The other will be sent from heaven," and I put parentheses, wormwood. "There will come all over the earth an intense darkness lasting 3 days and 3 nights. Nothing will be visible, and the air will be laden with pestilence, which will claim principally, but not exclusively, the enemies of religion. All the enemies of the church, secret as well as known, will perish over the whole earth during that universal darkness, with the exception of a few whom God will soon after convert. The air will be infected with demons who will appear under all sorts of hideous forms." And then one, and that was Blessed Anna Marie Tagey in the 19th century. And then this one is Sister Eleno Aiello, stigmatic. She had the stigmata of Christ, 20th century. And she said, "Clouds with lightning, rays, and tempests of fire will pass over the whole world, and the punishment will be the most terrible ever known in the history of mankind. It will last 70 hours, parentheses, 3 days. The wicked will be crushed and eliminated. Many will be lost because they have stubbornly remained in their sins. Then they will feel the force of light over darkness. The last thing she said was, the hours of darkness are near." So that was 20th century.
Okay. Angela, we got to move on here, but really appreciate your input today. Thank you, sir. John, we got these calls stacked up here, like I said earlier, like planes wanting to land at LaGuardia. Let's get your information out real quick, because I know this hour is going to get away from us here, on how people can listen to your radio show.
Okay, it's on every Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern on shortwave frequency 3185, simulcast on the Internet on WWRB.org, 10 p.m. Eastern on Sundays.
Okay. People need to keep in mind, going back to Velikovsky's work, 3 days of darkness for half the planet means 3 days of continuous sunshine for the other half.
Right. And that was recorded in the ancient annals, you know.
It was.
At the time of the Exodus, the Chinese.
You're right. The Chinese recorded the sun didn't come up when it was supposed to. And the Israelis, the Hebrews in the Sinai Desert, had a much longer day to finish up their battle.
That's right. Well, that's Joshua chapter 10, Joshua's longest day. That's right.
That's right. That's right. JG in California. Go ahead, JG.
Hi, John. Got two or three quick questions. John, setting prophecy aside, because I'm a believer as well, and we've all seen it come to pass. But
hold on after the break here, JG. We got a break coming up. Everybody, stay tuned.
Moore is as close as your telephone. Call him right now, 1-800-313-9443.
All right, we're back. Wrap up these calls here. If we don't get to callers, you have to call in next week. JG, let's go real fast.
Okay, John, you know, what's the, a couple of real quick questions. When is all this supposed to happen about solar flares? When, next year?
I believe it's, we're going to start seeing more intense solar storms this year. It seems to be beginning already because Planet X coming in below the ecliptic appears now to have passed below Jupiter and is now starting to interact much more severely with the sun. And we can look at earthquake data, too. I wanted to, in answer to your question, yes, I think we can expect it this year or certainly next year. But we have earthquake evidence that correlates to the sun's recent, during this decade, extreme hyperactivity, which lasted from the year 2000, when it normally should have been at its peak, and then declining, according to the Jupiterian 11-year cycle. What happened was it went into, instead of declining from 2000, earthquake activity increased all the way up to 2006. Uh-huh. And it's very surprising, very stark abnormality, indicating that something had come into the solar system and was interacting with the sun in the way that Jupiter normally does when Jupiter reaches perihelion, which it did in 2000. So this was sort of taken like a second Jupiter that was exciting the sun in an abnormal way. Okay, now, all of a sudden in 2007, solar activity, earthquake activity drops off dramatically, and that correlates with the theory that Planet X has now lost its fire, stopped firing, interchanging electrical interactions with the sun. The heliosphere has now been depleted, discharged. The solar capacitor has been pretty much discharged. And now Jupiter is interacting from below with Planet X and its horde of surrounding comets is out interacting from below with Jupiter. There was a massive comet collision on July 20th, 2009, into Jupiter. We saw the photograph from NASA of that comet collision. I suspected that was one of Planet X's outlying comets that crashed, indicating that this is further proof that the reason why there was a lull in solar activity was because Jupiter was drawing fire away from Planet X, but only temporarily. So we can expect now, as it gets closer and closer, it's past Jupiter, it's coming toward the inner solar system, toward the sun, we can expect this year, I believe, an increase in solar hyperactivity. And now we have no magnetic field. The magnetic field of the Earth is very weak, disoriented. Our shields are down, as Larry Joseph says. We're in for some big blasts, scorching solar winds.
Okay, so those of us that may not be rich and famous, depending on what I was going to ask you, what's the scientific proof in a two-part question that this is all going to happen, setting a Bible aside? And what are those of us that aren't rich and famous supposed to do if we can't secure a piece of property to tunnel rat under? What are we supposed to do if we have to live either in a duplex or an apartment? What do you do to protect yourself from this heat?
Okay, well, the scientific proof is so abundant, I couldn't even get into it right now, but we have newspaper articles that prove that Planet X does exist, and we have a great deal of scientific evidence that NASA has cited it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The Chandra X-ray Observatory satellite.
Gentlemen, we are out of time for this week. We are out of time. JG, call back next week. We'll continue this conversation. John DiNardo, thank you, sir. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome, John.
Okay, everybody have a great week coming up. Be safe, buy lots of ammunition, and God bless America.